until we started, till our reporter Catherine Peters started looking into it. And it's really kind of a fascinating organization. As you said, it's been around since 2003, and it's pretty obvious why the Defense Department would have thought there would be a need for this kind of organization, because these IEDs were just a huge, huge problem, putting lots and lots of American troops at risk and causing a lot of casualties. So they moved very, very quickly to set up this organization. And in fact, it had fewer than a dozen people at the beginning. And the interesting thing that we found was they have, to the extent they've had success with this, the reason is that they've essentially thrown out the rules and regulations and said this needs to be as nimble and quick an organization as we could possibly set up so that we can get the best countermeasures in place as quickly as we possibly can. So that's what they've set out to do. And now they're up to about 4,000 people, so they're a much, much bigger, more entrenched organization, but still operating really outside the traditional federal procurement and human resources rules and regulations.
Well, I want to get into that with you, but first, let's take a step back and talk about IEDs and why they've been such a trouble spot for our military, because they seem like they come from a whole different century. They seem so antiquated. How could that possibly cause so much damage? But they do. Why are they such a difficult issue?
Yeah, it really is kind of interesting. I think there are several reasons for it. One is, of course, they can be incredibly deadly, and for very for not very much money, you can put together a device that can cause an incredible amount of damage. So I think that's part of it. They're also, what the military likes to characterize as asymmetrical. That means it's a handful of people can take on the American military in a way that doesn't take them on head on, of course, but can still inflict a lot of damage. And I think the other thing is
they can be very, very nimble.
Yeah. And they can do this very quickly. And this, of course, is what the Defense Department wanted to try to do on their end, was be nimble, too. But the other thing is they're, by their very nature, they're a constantly evolving threat. So just as soon as you've figured out how to stop something, somebody has invented some other deadly means of really causing harm.
And as I was reading the story, the really interesting thing was, I mean, when you first shot this over to us, and I said, hold on, how do you stop these things? It seems almost unstoppable. Seems like an almost unstoppable force.
Yeah, and I think that was sort of what they were up against at the beginning. But I think what they have tried to do is say, let's track down every conceivable way we can counter this threat, whether it is equipment to protect our soldiers, or whether it is countermeasures to take on these kind of weapons, or whether it's things to try to detect them. They've approached all these different things. Even on the other end, they've funded research into how to deal with traumatic injuries caused by these kind of weapons.
Yeah, no silver bullet, is there?
No, there really isn't, and I think that's why they felt the need to try to create an organization that's, as nimble as it is.
So when you're going after an enemy like the types of people who would put out the IEDs, what do you have to go after? What did you learn in your research in this?
I think really what we learned was a lot of different things, but the big one is it sort of centers around you have to be willing to look at the whole range of options that are at your disposal and to try to stay at least up with what the enemy is doing, if not a step ahead of what they might be doing. And that's an incredibly big task to take on. It's not at all a small challenge. And that's why I think they've scaled this up so rapidly and had quite a lot of success from certain standpoints. And it's, I think, not entirely due to this organization's efforts, but in 2007, there were 24,000 roadside bomb attacks in Iraq. And last year, there were 3,000. So obviously, something is working in terms of just of countering this threat. Some of that, of course, is just the stepped-up American military presence and better intelligence and things like that.
Yeah, but no silver bullet. There's a whole bunch of reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really found interesting, and you mentioned it early on, was the connection, and in fact, I was talking about this at home last night. Never did I think that you would make a connection between these improvised explosive devices and procurement regulations. But the story really does make that connection, how that being nimble in procurement does help you with IEDs.
Yeah, absolutely. They certainly looked at this and said, there's just no way we can move as quickly as we need to following the existing rules and regulations. So they said, essentially, the rules and regulations don't apply to you. You go out, and here's your budget. You use it as you see fit. You take risks, and we're not going to assume that everything you fund or everything you do is going to work. We want you to take chances, and they have, and essentially have said you're completely outside of the standard rules and regulations that govern most of defense procurement.
Now, this is, of course, unique to this organization, isn't it? And is there any way that that template could be applied to any other organization? I mean, these are very unique circumstances.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting question. I mean, on the one hand, obviously, this is a very severe, serious, present threat that wouldn't necessarily apply to other organizations. But it does cause you, I mean, at least cause me to look at it and say, well, aren't there a lot of other things that would benefit from this kind of approach?
Yeah.
How few things should we classify as being okay to have procurement that takes forever to do and is incredibly laden with rules and paperwork?
Well, and it was almost frustrating to read through the story. It's like, hold on, if we carve out these exceptions, we're always finding these exceptions. Why isn't that almost the norm of doing business rather than having it be an exception?
Yeah, and that's really an open question. I mean, what does this say about your standard procurement system that you have this little faith in it, and why are you using it for other things? Now, there are points on the other side of that. I mean, it would be, you know, this is an organization that's had up to maybe $4.5 billion in budget on an annual basis, which is not chump change by any means, but in the scheme of the defense budget, it's not actually that much money. If you took the entire defense procurement budget and took that kind of risky approach to it, I think a lot of spending would be categorized as being wasteful, because they have had to fund things that just absolutely didn't pan out.
So are they trusting then that they won't inadvertently or somehow fund things that are wasteful when they make the exceptions to the rules? I mean, it's not all bets are off and it's just party, party, party. I mean, they got to have some rules.
They have very few, and I think that the trust is that the waste will not be excessive and that it's acceptable under these circumstances, which, you know, are not ordinary circumstances.
Is that unusual in the world of federal procurement to have a level of trust that goes that deep?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. I can't think of, I don't think I've seen another example like it. And it's not entirely unlimited. For expenditures of over $2 million, the people at JIDO, which is how they do the acronym, have to consult with senior American military leaders and with Congress. But think about that. I mean, how many organizations in government would just die to have up to $2 million in basically unfettered procurement authority?
Well, and the other part of that is the acknowledgement that not everything that they're going to do is going to work, because it's a very unique challenge. And as we said earlier, when you're going into it, you say, how are we going to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's right. And it does raise the question whether that principle couldn't be applied a little more broadly to say, hey, we're going to take a chance. We're going to take some risks. And yes, we may end up going down some roads that don't pan out, but we might hit one that really, really provides the solution that we really need. And does that actually cost you more money in the long run? You know, I kind of doubt it.